So, is the volume holding up okay? Is that still okay? More or less? Okay. You said we'd say a little bit more about metta and emptiness and a little bit more about this retreat that we're going to do together. And I've made myself some notes so that I can be to the point. So I'll stick to those. So there are many parts to any retreat, and we'll try and give a sense of that. But even in what we've kind of already mentioned, that there'll be some periods where there's, connection and movement. So in the Qigong sessions, in the walking sessions, and then coming in here in the stillness practice of whatever posture you find is really supportive for that, is the right posture for you. So those kind of two ways start to kind of marry into each other. And in the same way, it turns out that metta and emptiness also are really supportive of each other. So just as the in-breath may be the one that gives us life, but we have to have the out-breath as well, to make room for the next in-breath. So you can't have one without the other. And in many ways, it turns out that metta and emptiness also follow this in-breath, out-breath type of modality, type of relationship. Oh yes, this is why I need to check my notes. So the first thing to say is the next few minutes of me talking may or may not make good sense to you. Okay, my intention is to make sense. My intention is to be understood. But some of the things I'm going to be describing maybe seem a little bit strange, or they may not land fully with us at this time. So however much it makes sense, that's good, right? And then we can kind of focus on the good, take in the good. Ah, good. I got maybe 5%. That would be good. That would be nice. And some of us may feel like, oh, I've heard all this before and I understand it. And that may actually not be so good. So in a way, as they kind of say about, quantum mechanics or something, they say, oh, if you think you understand quantum mechanics, you didn't really get what it was pointing to. So in the same with kind of emptiness teachings, if you feel like, oh yeah, I get it, yeah, we can do with that, then kind of know that there's a lot more to explore, there's a lot more to investigate. So metta is actually quite simply something that you do very naturally in your life. It's this quality of friendliness. It's this quality of friendliness, and we have those friendly connections in our life. We have moments of experience that we really welcome in. And we tend to do that towards the lovely and the loving, right? But metta practice isn't particularly interested in just staying on that level where we are really appreciative of things which are nice to us. So metta practice is actually an attitude of welcoming, an attitude of friendliness, an attitude of openness, which are all really kind of nice, lovely experiences. But not having that limitation of them only being towards things that we already have decided we like and feel connected to. So if we can take a metta attitude into uncommon relationships, we can see that we're cultivating something that doesn't come exactly naturally to us, but actually makes a lot of sense, right? If what's really lovely about being among people who we like is that connection, that friendliness, that welcoming, that openness, wouldn't it be good if we could start to do that with people with whom the relationship isn't already on that standing? And in that way, we're contributing to changing that relationship. We're contributing to changing the world. We're actually contributing to a real kind of deep and meaningful transformation within ourselves and in the world in general. Okay? So we can actually have growing within us, we can already feel the seeds of it ready to sprout, of actually a real warmth and loving connection to all beings everywhere, regardless of who they are, what they are, what species they are, just towards the living beings of this planet. And ultimately, perhaps even just towards everything in all directions, everywhere, that metta isn't even getting bothered about whether this is a thing or not. It just becomes an atmosphere, an attitude, a radiance. Okay. So far, are we doing okay? Because it would be a pity to lose you at this point, because this is still within the 5% I'm hoping that you're going to agree with. Does that feel okay? Is it anyone not too sure? Okay. I'm trying not to go too fast either, but let me know if either the volume or the speed or any words in particular that I use. I can understand that it might be difficult for some of you to understand a very English accent. You know, you're typically exposed more to kind of the American accent, and I could do that, you know, but it would be more tiring for me, and I know, and probably then it's more tiring for you otherwise. But, you know, so if you're finding that difficult, I'm sending you metta. If you're finding me difficult, please also send me some metta, you know, and we can go against the stream in that way. Hi.
The best would be in German
accent. Okay. Yes. All right. Happy to try, but not tonight. So we have this kind of meta atmosphere, and we can feel that actually we're generating it together. You know, this kind of laughing, this lightness, this openness. You know, it's kind of actually maybe it's not so serious. It's all part of that. And then I want to speak about emptiness. And emptiness, on the other hand, can kind of sound like, oh, isn't that one of the really kind of the deep teachings? Or isn't that actually kind of, I'm not too sure about it. Maybe it even sounds a bit dry or a bit bleak or a bit difficult. But it turns out that it's actually, when we start to investigate our experience, we can see, emptiness isn't far off. It's not something to be uncovered far off. It's actually right here. And even what I've been speaking about with metta and with the potential for change and changeability and our ability to be involved in the change are all qualities of emptiness, okay? So it really implies a playfulness and a lightness to all experience. So that's what we're kind of looking for. So it's not heavy, it's not that difficult, and it's something to kind of ease into, and it will hopefully reveal itself through a sense of more openness and more connection. Okay, so the emptiness and the metta are starting to kind of imbue each other, kind of dye each other. You know, colour each other, flavour each other in this way. So emptiness is saying that things are not what they appear to be. Okay? So this that you're experiencing now is not what it appears to be. Okay? So you can just kind of drop that in there. Oh, okay. So it's not what it appears to be. What we see is that things, experiences, are made up from a lot of other factors. Okay, they're not sitting alone. And it turns out that we can play with those factors, you know, everything that makes up this experience, and we'll go through a few of them, and then change things. Okay? So we're speaking about bringing a meta attitude towards things that we don't like. So we could change that thing, right? That thing is going to change in the light of a meta attitude. You can kind of sense that that's going to happen. So that actually reveals emptiness and freedom through that ability to be playful. So just to kind of start with this experience that we're having now. So we normally presume that what we experience is the way things are. And we may even have kind of heard that as a definition for mindfulness practice. You know, be with things as they are. Be with things as they are. Yeah. It's lovely. You know, it's got a lot of metta in it. You know, be with things as they are. But it kind of presumes that we can be with things as they are. That there is a way that things are, and that experience will be able to meet that. And that certainty lens, you know, that I can be with things as they are, it's very functional. It, you know, it really helps us get things done. It helped us to get here today. You know, so yes. The bus is real, or the car is real, and you sit in there and I push this pedal, and that really gives fuel, and then off we go. But it also means we kind of overlook the fabricated, and that might mean complex or kind of made up, the brought together nature of experience. And we can turn to anything and start to investigate it through a different lens of actually saying, this is not what it appears to be. And then we actually are forced to see what it is. You know, this is not a bowl. This bowl, this ringing bowl, this is not a bowl. So, oh, well, then what is it? And that starts to bring in a different way of investigating. So we'll also notice not only do we take things to be, you know, individual and separate, which in a different way of investigating they cease to be, we also can notice that where our attention goes also really affects our experience. Yeah. And so in meditation, what we play with is actually redirecting attention to different things. So in any moment, like when someone is talking in a room and they're speaking a human language that we have some understanding of, we tend to listen to it. And we tend to continually listen to it and absorb the information in it. And in that way, we start to fade out the sound of the fan in the air conditioner. And we don't listen to that so much. And perhaps, you know, we're not being particularly aware of, you know, the space above our heads. And it turns out that when we do tune into space above our heads, that starts to change the experience, right? So as we notice what we weren't noticing, we notice that the things that we weren't noticing affect the experience that we're having. So attention is a selective object. It selects out from the environment things that we're going to pay attention to. And that's fine. That's the natural way of it. But we can guide attention in different ways, and we start to make up a different experience. So the experience of being in this room is dependent on what we pay attention to. Okay? And yet we feel like we are having the experience of being in this room, despite the fact that then we realize we're actually not paying attention to a lot of things which are going on in this room. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. So as I say, you know, this is something we're going to be developing over the days, and we're going to have experiential experiences with it. You know, we'll have our own direct experience of it. And in that way, it'll make a lot more sense of even why it's worth talking about. You know, this may be very obvious. It may be something we've noticed since we were very small, or very much kind of beginning to think about what it means to be a human being. Or maybe, you know, some of this stuff might be kind of new and interesting to explore. So before going off into objects and breaking them down and what are they really and all this, let's just look at something that we're always experiencing, but we don't see so much because it is literally the lens through which we see. And that's our moods, our mind states, right? So there's always a mood or a mind state present, right? And we know that. And yet many times we don't really pay attention to it and think, I'm in this mood. I'm in this type of a mind state. I'm experiencing through this kind of a lens. And that lens, that mood, is going to be really affecting what we notice, what we pay attention to. So today was a lovely sunny day, lots of streaming sunshine, and, you know, really how that might make us feel. For some of us, you know, it's too sunny. For some of us, you know, I just love to feel the rays of the sun. Or some of us, doesn't really, you know. Not like me, you're not from England where these are rare, you know, like fully sunny days. But let's say that we're one of those kind of people who likes to see the sun, likes a bright sky. Then we might feel that I'm in a good mood because I'm getting the kind of weather I like. And we could feel that, and we could kind of have the certainty lens. It's like, yeah, I'm in a good mood because it's my kind of weather. Or I'm not in a good mood because it's not my kind of weather. But actually, the good mood and the weather are not directly related in this way. That if we were, you know, in a bad mood, we may not actually even notice what the weather's doing. right? So there needs to be some kind of grounding in the space of the good mood. And good moods usually feel spacious, usually feel there's kind of an easing in the self-importance, you know. It's like something is freer, something is flowing. So a certain degree of that is necessary for us even to notice the sunshine, which could then be able to give us the impression that this is why I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood because it's my kind of weather. And so what else is contributing to this mood? And we can keep looking and we keep finding different qualities that are having an influence. And of course, there's all kinds of past conditioning, there's all kinds of experiences that we've had. But right now, in this present moment, there's a way that we're breathing, and there's a way that we're holding our body, and those are contributing to the creation of the mood that you're in right now. And that's not to say that they are the mood that you're in right now, but that they contribute, right? And we can see it, that if we are feeling quite tense or quite worried or quite agitated, you know, we'll breathe in a certain way, we'll hold our body in a certain way, you know, it kind of starts to hunch and the breathing can become quite kind of drawn or difficult, not flowing easily. And then we can reflect on those times when we feel at ease, when we're feeling quite happy, and how we hold our body and how we breathe. It's a good reflection, the breath. Paying attention to breath is a good way of getting to know what's going on in the heart and mind, what's going on in the mind state, in the mood, in the heart space. So if we can say that it's easy to get to know our moods through our body energy, through the flow of the posture, through the flow of the breath, then what would happen if we're in a tense or agitated mood or an unhappy mood or a disappointed mood, and we notice that our breath is in that kind of a mode, and we think, well, just for fun, I'm going to breathe like I'm having a really good time, or I'm going to place my body and I'm going to walk as if I don't have a care in the world, what's actually going to happen to your experience? And you can explore it for yourself, and you may find, oh, some days it worked, some days it didn't. But how do you know that you're in a good mood? Like, how do you know? How do you understand that in your experience? Like, typically, you would understand it in the way the body feels, and the way the mind feels, and the way the breath feels. So if we're actually cultivating a different body experience and a different breath experience, then perhaps we'll actually start to experience a different mood experience towards the mood which is kind of fading from the experience because it doesn't have the necessary conditions to be able to sustain itself. So in this way, if this is what happens, if this is even possible, then we would have to say that the mood does not inherently exist. It exists dependent on other causes and conditions. And some of those causes and conditions are quite easily in our control. How I hold my body and how I breathe this breath. We can affect those elements, right? And if we can affect them just a little bit, then we can contribute towards change. So in Buddhism, everything changes. You know, this is one of the key teachings. Every phenomena that arises changes. But it also means that in every moment there's changeability. There's the possibility of making a change. And that's what emptiness teachings are presenting to us, is that there's the potential for playfulness with the experience that we're in, as we're experiencing it. And it turns out this doesn't only apply to moods, yes? It turns out that everything is empty. There's no real limit, then, to this playful creativity that we can be involved in. So this is a middle way teaching, right? This is not the teaching that nothing exists because, you know, you can change anything. It's that everything leans, everything arises. This is the middle way. It neither exists nor not exists. It's not the way it appears to be. So many things are not the way they appear to be, and we constantly keep investigating. And so this bringing it back in, you know, this metta and emptiness, they start to reveal each other. That if we can bring in metta, then that's only possible because of emptiness. And as we guide emptiness, we might be really wise to bring a kind of metta attitude to welcoming of experiences so that we can get to know them and then play together with whatever arises. And the beautiful thing about the metta way of looking or investigating experience is that it brings more connection, and it brings this ease, and it brings that softening of the sense of self and the sense of this is important, this is essential, this must go this way. And as we investigate that everything is made up, that everything is brought together, that everything is empty, then that kind of groundlessness that can sometimes feel fearful or bleak or, you know, very empty in a negative sense, the metta lens can really aid with that. Yeah, it can really kind of support an opening of the heart as we investigate with everything else. And really kind of realign us back with the middle way. So yeah, I think that's what I wanted to say about metta and emptiness. This real sense that whatever is happening is to some degree made up, and that we can play skillfully and with real heart for the welfare of all, you know, for the benefit of all of us. And that includes yourself, yeah, to bring freedom into the experience. So I wonder, maybe before we go into how we kind of envision this retreat, are there any questions about that, those kind of core principles at this time that we might be helpful to unpack a little more or clarify? Okay. Well, that's good. I'll pass to you. Yeah, sure.
I think I might understand some of what you're saying about the emptiness, that some things just appear different, are different than what they appear, but I couldn't understand how you're connecting this with the metta.
Yeah, sure. So the main way we could say we connect it with the metta is that we might have kind of default ways of looking at the world. And they will normally be, you know, unfortunately, and I'm not criticizing anyone or myself for this, that we typically look through a lens of what's this going to do for me? Okay? And we look at something as like, you know, how much. Like when we go up and they take our food, you know, it's like, you know, what do I like from this display of food, you know, or whatever. And we could actually change that as in, you know, oh, that looks like something really nice. Wouldn't that be nice to leave for everyone else? You know, it would be a really different way of looking at the meal table. So what we see is actually our experience of taking food in that meal is radically changed by switching from the what can this do for me, or into the meta view of like, what of this can I give to other people? You know, like, so I was speaking about generosity and gratitude a little bit. It was in Hebrew, but I'm guessing that was kind of the flavor of what was going on. Is that's a way of looking at retreat, you know. So if it's possible to change our experience
that's suggesting an emptiness to the experience. It's liberated from one view into another view. And if that other view feels more spacious, it feels more beneficial, and it feels good for the heart and mind and body and soul or whatever else, then that's a skillful way of looking at life. And so metta is like a skillful way of looking at life, but it's only possible to apply skillful ways of looking at life because everything is empty. But the everything of everything is empty, I certainly haven't covered this evening. But like, if we kind of bear that in mind, then we can see that metta is actually applicable in maybe an infinite way, an infinite range. Does that make it a bit more clear? Yeah. Thanks for the question. Yeah. Oh, yeah, a couple more questions. Great.
Your explanation of emptiness are very similar, almost identical, to the explanation that was given before for dependent arriving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any difference between emptiness. It's, I think it's mainly Mahayana here until now was learning to dependent arriving is explanation, exactly the same explanation you gave now.
Yeah, so Nagarjuna, who's like a great poet of emptiness, he actually sings at one point, emptiness is nothing other than this dependent arising experience. So yeah, dependent origination reveals emptiness. And
Mayana are very proud in their emptiness.
Yeah, which is probably not a great thing to do.
Yeah.
yeah. But we could say that dependent origination reveals emptiness. But emptiness is a lot of mutual dependencies, and dependent origination is this particular linearity of a circle of rebirth and this kind of cycle. But even within that, the relationships between the different elements and the different parts of everything are all leaning on each other, So it's kind of both a simple and as you investigate it, a very complex arrangement of empty relationships and empty phenomena. Mm. Yeah. So it we can kind of go at it from different sides. Thanks.
So to see things as they are is to see that they are empty. Is it the same?
Well, it. That's a really great question. At some point, certainly, yes, to see that they're empty, and to see that looking for emptiness is also a lens. It's also another kind of empty way of experiencing things. So that's kind of one way of participating in existence, is to look for their emptiness. And when we look for their emptiness, that's something that we will find, and that's something that we can explore. But we could also look for them because they're empty, we can look at them as solid and as real, which is why we also have this kind of common experience, which sometimes is called delusion, but it's actually, a habitual way of looking, but that's also empty, but it's also revealing something. So we can look in multiple ways because of the underlying emptiness, but what we see, what we perceive, will be done according to the lens which we look with. That's kind of quite a complicated thing to say, but like, yes and no, I suppose, is
there. There's certain qualities that help us see things as they are, in the same way seeing their emptiness.
Yeah, I think in kind of a, maybe the easiest way to say it for now is that maybe something like what we see what we look for, right? But what we really see, do we see emptiness? Or we see that things can only be this way because they're empty. That empty isn't a thing to see, it's a relational quality underlying things that they don't inherently exist from their own side. So we can kind of look with that lens and we see things in that way, and it brings this kind of freedom and various other experiences, but it's an experience because of their emptiness.
Okay.
Maybe just to say that two important things with this. One is that we will be unfolding these teachings over the week together. Slowly as a week can allow, and working with each person at your pace with this. So to really also emphasize that there's something in this teaching for all of us, yeah? And it's, as we've just heard from what Nathan was speaking and with the questions that were asked, it's an ongoing unfolding of the practice. It's a process. So sometimes, just like Nathan was saying earlier with the word meditation, the word emptiness certainly creates the sense that there is something there that we need to understand or know, and it's a thing, whereas actually it's a process. Yeah, it's a process, and it can be helpful to remember that. So, just to check two things before I carry on. One is the volume. Is this a good volume? Yeah. Okay. And the other is the language, because I would like to continue in English, but I want to check with people if anyone would prefer a translation at this point rather than needing to deal with my English. And a real invitation, like, not to be embarrassed. You prefer that I speak in Hebrew? I will generally speak in Hebrew. Okay. Okay. So why don't we do this for tonight? I promise that I'll speak in Hebrew from tomorrow onwards. But for tonight, if I say something, and that goes also for when Nathan is speaking, if we say something that you don't understand or don't hear, please stop us. Yeah? This is also practicing metta, and it's also practicing emptiness. Yeah, because if you don't understand or you don't hear, it affects the totality of what is happening here. Okay, so another example for emptiness is that a retreat is made up of many conditions. Some of the primary conditions are the people that are here and the listening that is here, and how that comes together. So if someone doesn't understand or doesn't hear, it affects the process for all of us. So if you don't, then please stop us. And I can say it again in Hebrew. Nathan can say it again in simpler English. or I will say it in Hebrew, whatever he said. But really, really helpful. And also it's an act of metta, it's an act of kindness, because if you didn't understand, others probably didn't either. So we can really see that it can be very difficult to do, but would that work for you, Seema? Yeah, great. And I'm sure I'm speaking to others as well. And I promise it'll be Hebrew from tomorrow. Good. So I really want to flow on about the practice that we're going to do together from this understanding or this kind of attitude that we're bringing to the practice, that what we're doing here in the practice, how this retreat is unfolding, how the teachings will unfold, is something that we're doing together. Yeah, it's something that we're doing together. And I think it's particularly, I was just reflecting on it, particularly exciting on this retreat, always exciting for me, because this is the first time we're teaching a retreat like this in Israel. Yeah, so a metta and emptiness retreat based on the approach of Robert Bayer, who is one of our teachers and friends. Some of you may know him, some of you may not, but he has a very particular way of approaching these issues and these practices. So, you know, it's always wonderful to come together on retreat, and I always have this sense of this adventure that we're going on together. But it feels like this retreat is extra special in that way. These particular teachings, particular approach to the practice that we're going to unfold together, that we're going to explore together, and that we're going to create together. And this is a real manifestation of emptiness when we look at retreat through that lens, yeah? That it's not, you know, what makes the retreat, yeah? Is it Indore? Indore is changing. Some of you saw today, you know, it's a big shock to arrive, yeah? So is it Indore? Is it the place? Is it the meditation hall? You know, if all of us were sitting in that hall, would it be a different thing? You know, is it the teachers? Yeah. What makes a retreat? Is it the fact that we have a schedule? The fact that we have a bell? You know, what makes a retreat? What creates it? Countless causes and conditions that are coming together and that are impacted, yeah, by how we are here together. Yeah, by how we're creating it together. And as I was speaking earlier about that sense of generosity and community, yeah, so those two, the metta and the qualities of the heart that are so key to the practice, generosity, community, kindness, as well as the inquiry, as well as that interest that we all have, that's why we're here, to look more deeply at our experience. What makes up this experience? You know, what makes this up? You know, we've been alive for, you know, at least I think 20 years here in this hall, I'm guessing. Yeah, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And yet, what is this? Yeah, and that's what we're interested to explore. You know, everyone here has done a retreat before. So that means that we have that fire to some degree, the fire of the heart and the fire of the interest. And we're here to explore and to create this experience for ourselves and for each other. So I spoke earlier today about some of the supports for being on retreat. And I want to speak a little bit about the support of ethics, of sila. I think usually when we speak in Hebrew, we just use the word sila, the Pali. Yeah, that attitude of metta, of kindness, in the way that we relate to each other on retreat. Yeah, in the way that we relate to each other on retreat. The kind of practices, basic practices that we take on. Yeah, the practice of non-harming. Yeah, this is such a huge one. Not causing harm to other living beings. Yeah. That's, metta is non-harming, right? That's the same, it's the same thing, not causing harm. As a practice, yeah, looking at what that means for each of us. Prioritizing generosity and respect, yeah, for possessions, for things. As we've said, we've given quite a few examples around the food, yeah. But we're sharing space here in very intimate ways. Yeah, so how do we prioritize that respect around each other's things? Prioritizing non-harming respect and safety around our sexual energies. Yeah, again, a real practice of metta towards ourselves and others. That supports us to create a space that is safe and respectful so that we can all practice. So on retreat, as you all know, we take on celibacy. We don't act on our sexual energies. Yeah? But to see that, see all of these as a practice and an expression. Yeah, expression of metta, expression of our understanding of how we create space together. So we also undertake the practice of not clouding the mind, yeah, not clouding the mind through what we take into the body. So no drugs, no alcohol. As we heard, no smoking in this area. but we can extend that. Yeah, what do I use? How do I normally cloud the mind? And how can I let go of that as an act of generosity and an act of kindness towards myself and towards each other? And we also take on the practice of non-harming speech, yeah, which is very much silence, yeah, here. But doing that from that sense, yeah, of really seeing that gift that we're offering to ourselves and to each other with the silence. Silence that allows us to deepen into our practice, that allows us to look at our experience, and that again creates a safe space for ourselves and for others. So sometimes we speak about the practice as a practice of deep listening. Yeah, we listen deeply to our experience. We listen deeply to what is unfolding and what is revealing itself. And silence is what allows us to do that. And I know this was said earlier, but to really also, this kind of actually is a double practice. It's a practice of silence and it's a practice of not clouding the mind. It's the detox from the digital world that we're undertaking here. And we really more and more see this in ourselves as practitioners and as retreat teachers, that we need to detox from the phones and the computers and the screens. Yeah, we all need that. And we're giving ourselves a great gift when we do that, a great and wonderful gift. So to see the sila, to see the ethical exploration as a practice, yeah, this is a practice, and as we undertake it, it allows us to have more calmness, yeah, to have more calmness, less distraction, and less regret. Less regret. So it's not something that we do because we have to, yeah, because those are the Buddhist rules. But we do that as a practice that is supportive. Yeah, practice that is supportive for our own process and for the creation of a safe and respectful community of practitioners together. So we'll stop here for this evening and have some time for walking meditation until 9:15, 8:45. And then following that, we'll have a half-hour meditation here with some instructions. It'll be a metta practice. If you feel tired and you need rest, then you're allowed to go to bed. And this is a general thing to say. Yeah. But if you feel like you have energy and you want to use this opportunity to practice together, then please do. And generally remembering over the days to listen to yourself, to listen to your body, to listen to your energy levels, but to also feel the support of the continuity of practice, when we can allow that to just kind of flow through the day. And we will be talking about that a lot more. So thank you for your listening, your participation in this creation of this retreat and the opening talk, and for your patience, especially with me for speaking English, because it's easier. And if you choose to rest, then good rest. And if not, we'll see you back here in 25 minutes. And with the walking for this evening, I know everyone here has done walking practice before, but one encouragement will be that we can walk in a way that supports us to arrive. Yeah. So we can walk and feel what it is to come here and what it is to welcome yourself to being here. Yeah. So greeting yourself, greeting the place, welcoming. Very simple. Very simple. Enjoying the night, enjoying the moon. Yeah. And enjoying the practice. Are there any questions? Okay.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.